Hello, everyone, and welcome to the June 17th episode of the TMS Wiki's Tuesday Night Discussion Group. This week, as before, we are going over God Does Not Want You to Be in Pain, the new book by Eric Watson and Walt Alexi about their recovery from TMS and how faith was involved in that, in their own techniques for healing. This week we are going to be doing the two chapter nines. And we just had a wonderful, if boisterous, discussion with one of our callers, so we're running a little bit late, and so I am going to jump straight to it. Walt, do you want to tell us a little bit about your chapter? It was a very serious chapter, but a powerful one, and very personal.
Well, yes, thank you. My chapter is called The End Game. Dr. Sarno says that a lot of people of any age, but especially when you're up in your years, you start to worry and fear your mortality. And that can cause, and often does cause, TMS pain. Your anger at, you worked hard all your life, you did your best, and then it's going to be all taken away from you. And you, and I remember reading, Woody Allen. He was really, really angry at the Lord. He's Jewish. But he was really angry at the Lord because he said, gee, you know, I've worked all my life and I've tried to, you know, write, make good movies and all that. And all of a sudden, without me wanting to have it end, it's going to end. And I guess I really have been one of the lucky ones because next week I'm going to be 84. And I really started only to think about my mortality until I was about 80. When I turned 80, that was the year that depressed me. And I think, well, wow, I'm lucky because for 79 years, I thought it happened to somebody else and everybody else, but not me. And what you have to do, what you have to remember, Sarno says, and another many other people that I've read about, you just have to accept it. And in my chapter, I tell many examples of how famous people accepted their concept that they were eventually going to leave this world. One of my best friends said, Walt, you know, wherever you're going is going to be better than where it is because you've been worried about money all your life. You'll never have to be worried about money. That was one of my great insecurities. My family grew up during the Great Depression, when, you know, they were struggling to find jobs and make a living and provide for food on the table and rent for the apartments we were in. And then I started to realize when I was journaling about all this that that their parents had the same problems. My father's parents were struggling in Indiana. They came from Poland and were struggling in Indiana, and my mother came from Austria, and they had to leave Austria because the husband's father died, and the farm they had went to the older brother, the old primogeniture, I think it's called in England and other countries. So they had to come to this country, and they struggled, and he died soon after, the husband died soon after he got here. And my mother's mother had to take in laundry to try to make a living, and she had to give away her two older daughters, three older daughters, including my mother, to other families because she couldn't care for them. She had two younger sons on her hands, so economic problems were in my parents and in my grandparents, and then I became a freelance writer. And that's a very uncertain way of making your living.
I was going to say, there's plenty of drama there, yeah.
Oh, boy, it's like walking across the Grand Canyon on a tightrope. But every time I needed money or to keep paying the bills, I wouldn't get on my... I did every night. I would get on my knees and I would pray to the Lord. And I never asked for money. I always asked for work. And work came. Usually in the form of another magazine article assignment or a book that I was writing sold. And So that's what I was worried about, and then I guess that kept me from worrying about the end game. And so anyway, when I turned 80, I realized, hey, you know, one day that's going to happen to me. And my friend said, just keep focused. It's where you're going is going to be better. And most everybody in the quotes that I have at the end of my chapter, dozens of quotes from great minds, from Ernest Hemingway to Greek philosophers and religious people, pretty much say the same thing. Thomas Wolfe said, death is the last voyage, the longest, and the best. Holy Bible says, for the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. Now, I don't know if anybody's listening who's religious, and you don't have to be, just have faith. It's a spiritual side if it isn't a religious side. And there's a wonderful quote that I like to mention in my chapter about animals. I keep thinking of my darling dog Annie here. And this is from from the French philosopher Voltaire. In the middle 1770s, he wrote, "Animals have these advantages over man. They never hear the clock strike. They die without any idea of death. Their last moments are not disturbed by unwelcome and unpleasant ceremonies or the cost of their funeral." They just live for the moment, and if you play with them and feed them and give them water, that's all they ask for. They're happy. But they don't think of the end game. And two other things that I learned about after I wrote this chapter. One was one of my favorite movies, a Western from the 1960s, called Ride the High Country. Beautiful movie about two aging former lawmen. Joel McRae and Randolph Scott played it. And Joel McRae is the real hero of the story, and I really love that actor. He was so wonderful. And he kept his partner from straying and stealing the gold that they were protecting. But he gets shot helping a girl who's being mistreated by another man, gets shot and he's dying. And he accepts it because he said, I feel justified. My life has been worthwhile, decent. I feel justified going into my house, which he met the kingdom of heaven. The other one is a video I watched about the life and career of the Olympic swimming champion from Australia, Murray Rose. And he won Olympic medals, and he said he won them because he focused on the present. The present moment while he was swimming. He just concentrated on his swimming, and he won those medals and attributed it to that. But he also, in his 60s, I guess he was, and he lived healthy, so he should have had years ahead of him, and he was happily married and had a wonderful son. And he was helping other people through being on Olympic committees, and had a real good life going for him. And then he was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and he very comfortably accepted it. He didn't, you know, complain, why me, Lord? Why are you cutting me down in the prime of my life? He accepted it. So acceptance, I think, is one of the big, big things in the end game. And if anybody listening or reading the book has any problems with that, can feel comfort from seeing how these other people accepted this. And then I remember I got a quote here from Leonardo da Vinci, and he said, "As a well-spent day brings sleep, so a life well-used brings a happy death." So if we make peace with our parents or anybody who's, you know, done something that we feel has harmed us in any way, if we forgive them, I think we can feel justified and be at peace with ourselves. And that's kind of all I have to say. Anybody got questions and want to share thoughts on this?
I have a couple questions. I mean, I, or at least some comments. When I and feel anyone else, if you want to jump in, feel free to do it. I'd love to hear Eric if you want to chime in as well. But what I like about this chapter is in previous chapters you've taught us how to live in the moment, and here it seems like that's where you're kind of showing us how to do it. You're showing us something that you deal with in a very present way and saying, you know, because I think everybody on the forum admires you, Walt. I don't know if you know this. You probably, whatever, but I think everybody on the forum admires you because you're 84 and or not 84 yet. Yeah, a couple more days.
I appreciate that. And it's been wonderful. It's been wonderful knowing the love I've gotten from all you people.
Yeah. Well, and just the admiration, and we're impressed, and I think this is kind of how you do it. You keep in the presence.
You stay positive.
Yeah, you stay positive.
That's one of my main things. And perseverance. And as a writer, I always say it's really 90% or 100% perseverance. It might even only be 10% talent, but it's 90 or 100% perseverance. And I think that goes to healing from TMS, too. Persevere.
Well, and that...
Arnold Ashe, the tennis champion, Arnold Ashe, has a saying that I put up in front of my computer on my desk. He says, never give up, no matter what the score is.
Yeah. Well, and that goes to, so I mentioned earlier that we had this kind of powerful from the heart discussion before we turned the recording on. And I think that's kind of what we were talking about there, was about perseverance. And, you know, the TMS is going to be pulling you back down into the physical, and you need to persevere and keep, you know, focusing and not allow it to. Keep living in the present. Keep, you know, doing exactly what you're doing. Find your own way to do it. So I do love hearing myself talk, but I love hearing other people talk even more. Does anyone?
We learn from hearing you, too.
I don't know about that. I learned from everyone else as well. anyone else? I guess I want to be the one learning. Anyone else want to jump in and share any thoughts about perseverance and about life, a life well lived, and the final scene, the end game?
I have a question. Of you all, do you now, and some of you suffered from TMS, as you were pointing out earlier, for years, decades, do you feel in any way that it was a blessing?
Definitely. It's Walt here. I think it's one of the best things that ever happened to me, because when I got my shoulder pain from lifting something 2 years ago, I never thought much about all of this. Pain, TMS, the end game, or any of it. It took me into thinking about my faith in the Lord, the reasons for my anger. I had to learn to forgive my parents. It really led me on a journey of self-discovery. And I think it was the Lord saying, you've had it easy, now we're going to make it a little hard for you, but you're going to benefit from it. And I believe I have.
Interesting. I feel kind of the same way, where I feel like I've learned a tremendous amount from it as well. I read a book by a guy named Martin Seligman called Learned Optimism. And in it he says... he talks about all the benefits of optimism, of which there are very, very many. Optimists accomplish more in their life. They accomplish their goals. People like them more. There are many reasons to want to be an optimist. But The one benefit that pessimists have, and I am still going to count myself in the camp, in the pessimism camp, is that we tend to actually have more realistic assessments of the future. I think more realistic assessments of ourselves. So this has been, they've had really carefully designed studies to show us this, where they, you know, have other people rate your skills and then you rate yourself and then you take an optimism test and they do a bunch of statistics. But, I used to gloat. I used to say to myself, but at least I'm right. And I think one of the big things.
Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
Can you explain that study a little further?
So they would take a bunch of people and they would divide them into two groups. They would give them a test to measure optimism, and they'd divide them into two groups. They'd put the optimists on one side and the pessimists on another side, and then they would empirically and rigorously measure some other quality like intelligence, and it turns out that the optimists were better at guessing their own intelligence than the pessimists. Sorry, the pessimists were better at guessing their own intelligence than the optimists were. The optimists would, as you might expect, have inaccurately high estimates of their own intelligence.
Did they do a 10-year study later, like 10 years later, stick on the same thing and see where the optimists were then?
Well, I'm not totally on top of the literature.
All
I remember is what I learned then. What they did say is that in general, the optimists did accomplish a lot more. So they definitely said that, and there were many, many, many qualities that the optimists had. But they also said that, and it's not just going to be one study, these are going to be a lot of studies. So Martin Seligman, when he's talking here, he's going to be saying, you know, about series of studies that tend to lead to the conclusion and have convinced him that pessimists tend to have more accurate assessments of themselves and about the future. But I don't want to get sidetracked on that. I just want to say that for a long time, one of the things that TMS taught me was actually that emotions matter, and that it isn't, that a scientific worldview isn't all that it's about, and that, you know, there's a lot that I can learn from optimists, and there's a lot that I can learn from people like Walt. So that's one of the very valuable things that the TMS taught me.
Well, I remember years ago there used to be like the Elks and the Moose organizations that businessmen belong to, successful businessmen, and there was one called the Optimists Club. Mm-hmm. I never heard a club for the pessimists.
That's because they knew it would never work.
Right. Well, W. Clement Stone and a bunch of others wrote books, The Power of Positive Thinking. There's never been a book published on the power of negative thinking. But go ahead, different strokes for different folks.
Well, I mean, it makes me wonder, you know, about isn't the pessimist, isn't that the one that pretty much gets beat up by the bully and the inner critic, and or maybe not beat up, but don't they more agree with those voices or those things?
That's interesting.
I think they're more likely to do that, and that might be one of the reasons why pessimists in general have a harder time of it. Yeah. Yeah.
Do pessimists hurt more? Have we looked into that?
I would bet that pessimists get depressed a whole lot more. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. God bless them.
You're like the super optimist, Eric. You are like the biggest optimist
yes,
I know.
Is.
And
well,
incredibly
that's what my that's pessimist. What my chapter is on here.
Well, okay, maybe that's the transition that we need. North Star just had a funny quote. Do you want to share what you just wrote in the chat room?
I used to joke that I could run a dial a pessimist hotline. So you would call me with your happy news, and I would tell you all the reasons why it wouldn't work and what the pitfalls were. And then I would defend my pessimism by saying, well, at least I'm realistic. And now that's kind of a tension there, too, because I do tend to be very pragmatic, and I do tend to be intuitive. So I think it's a matter of observing things but not giving it a negative judgment. Just having an awareness of stuff is different than, you know, the pessimist half full, half empty, whatever. You know, so I'm learning to temper my my awareness of things when I can see something coming down the pipe, to just realize it's not necessarily negative. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, and that's the emotional awareness that I think TMS taught me, is being aware of the facts and then how I feel about the facts and how they're different, and then taking mind. Am I getting you right there? Kind of taking a mindful approach.
Absolutely, I'm beginning to realize how, and I think that's one thing I'm grateful for the TMS. Now, there's some days I'm not grateful for it because I'm very much dealing with a lot of issues right now, but I am very grateful for the internal journey that it sent me on, and becoming more vulnerable and being real, being authentic. Authenticity has always been really important to me, but I didn't realize how much I was burying myself in order to be a people pleaser and all those other wonderful TMS qualities that we possess. So, and then learning is just what you said, Forrest. I assign judgment to so many things. That's a nice person. That's a bad person. This is good. This is a bad thought. The other day, I think I'd written on the forum, realizing with some family stuff with my daughter's wedding a few weeks ago, how much I was beating myself up over, you know, a ditzy family member. And then it wasn't so much just saying, oh, you're being ditzy. Then it's that's really bad of you to say that. You shouldn't do that. And no wonder I've been hurting. constantly beating myself up in this little tennis game, you know, the good angel and the bad angel over either side of the shoulder, duking it out. And, so anyway, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent.
Thank you. No, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah.
So thanks for listening.
No, thanks for sharing. I think it's important also to get female perspectives and, you know, just a wide variety of perspectives. I think that's core for us. I know I enjoy it a lot, so thanks. Yeah.
Female perspectives. This is Molly, now time coach. I'm able to jump on the call.
Yay!
Hey, Molly!
Hey, Molly.
Hi, Molly.
Hi.
Thanks for joining. Eric, I'm actually interested to hear your take on that question from Paula as well. Do you feel do you see any positive in your PMS experience, and do you still see negative?
The positive is the power. It outweighed. This is what it done for me. Ever since I've said this probably 100 times. Ever since I was a little kid, all I wanted to do was help people, and I studied mind and body. I studied the Bible. I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a psychologist. All these different things. I wanted to be somebody that was in there to help people. And by the time I was 29, I did get healed. I did get healed for a period of years, and then pain came back on me. And by the time I was 39, I'd already been a preacher, and we'll talk about the rest of that story in a little bit. But I had lost my hope. I had lost my drive. I thought that everything I'd studied, I thought that everything that I had read and learned and cultivated and seeded for, that it was all wrong. That everything that ever made me happy, it was all wrong. What was I doing laying there in that bed for a year hurt? If it was right, I should have been able to heal myself. I should have been able to get myself healed, and I couldn't do it. And I just got this huge depression on me. I didn't know how to get it off. I didn't know how to look optimistic no more. Everything I'd looked at had failed me. Now that was just in my mind, okay, at this time in this period of a year. But then when I looked in the book and I saw John Sono saying, tell the pain to stop it. Tell the pain to, you know, tell it off. Give it heck, you know, he was basically telling me the same words that I was speaking to other people to heal them. And then I understood that this pain in my body, that there was another consciousness there. There was other parts to me. There was another part that I had to start correcting, okay? Because I always thought it was just me, myself, and I always thought it was just my mind. I didn't know I had other parts in there. I didn't know I had an id. I didn't know I had all these other parts that I had to deal with. But then when I learned that, then when I learned about these other parts, okay, I learned how to heal. And I got my hope back. I got my peace back. I got my joy back. And when I got all that back, I mean, it was like from day one, I was already helping people. I was back to the old me again. Even though I was still in pain, even though I was hurting, I was already from day one helping other people. I was already using what I had been learned for over 20 years. I was using what I knew worked to help others. I was already telling them what to do to get better. And that was at the TMS Wiki, that was at TMS Health, that was everywhere. And I mean, of course, nobody's going to listen to you unless you go to TMS Week or TMS Health. Everybody else thinks you're crazy. But, yeah, it gave me my hope back, you know? I mean, of course, the family didn't know what was going on. They thought, you know, I was just talking, oh, man, he's just trying to be optimistic again, you know? He's just talking into the air, and he's never going to get better. He's going to have to go through with this disability, you know, and oh, poor Herbie, you know, and I know that's what they were saying. I know that's what was going on in their mind. But here it is 2 years later now, and look who's smiling. Look who's talking. look who's been healed. Look who's been, you know, then came this far. I mean, it's me. And I don't give myself a big pat on the back for that. I'm just proud. I'm very optimistic because everything I've studied in my life, everything I've learned, has all been made true through a man named Dr. Sarno. Through a man named Dr. Sarno, he decided to fight and stand up and fight that good fight of faith or whatever you want to call it, and he stuck with it for, I think, 40 or 50 years. And I'm glad he did, because I had to hear it from an MD. I'd already heard it from so many other sources, but I had to hear it from an MD. And when I heard it from the MD, that was it. That was all I needed. It confirmed, and I got my optimism back. I got my hope back. I got my joy back. I knew right then and there it was going to be my mind that was going to heal my body. And that's what happened. That's how I did it. Of course, there's a long story that goes with it, but that's it. That I always say this is the best thing that ever happened to me, because I get to do what I want to do. I get to enjoy my life again. I thought life was over at 39 years old. I'm 42 years old now, and life's just beginning. It's all beautiful. It's a beautiful life.
Wow, it's powerful stuff. Yeah, thanks for sharing.
I think what you talk about, you know, this belief that we are going to be healed and this faith, you know, I mean, I it's amazing how consistent that message is through every single person's book that writes about TMS healing. And, you know, it's like I have to keep reading it over and over and over to kind of recondition my mind of like, no, this is, I am being healed. And what is it, one of those that Dr. Friedis, he's always, you know, don't give up. It's always telling, don't give up. Keep hoping. Mm-hmm. Then there's a lot of power in that.
Yes, there is. Yes, just that knowing that it's going to happen. It, you know, in a way, it's good to just believe it's already done happened. I mean, like I was just saying a minute ago, I was already telling people how to get better and how to heal and all the steps, the startup steps and everything, and I hadn't been studying the book but a month. And I was that on fire for it. I was already helping people, and yeah, I still had pain. I was still hurting, but it had done elevated. It had done got better by 50% within the first month. And I was looking at how far I had came in this 1 month. But at the same time, you know, that 1 month, it went through the second month, and then it got worse, and then you get to the third month, and it gets better, and then you get to the fourth month, and it gets worse, and then you kind of in and out, you know. It's not linear. It's like a crossroads. It goes backwards and forwards. But the whole time, I stayed with the thoughts that I'm just like I'm talking now, and I healed.
You know, it's so cool about what you share, Herbie, and I've been doing Dr. Schubiner's 28-day program. I'm like on day 45 of it.
Awesome.
He gets into the neurology of what's going on and how the different parts of your brain light up. You know, like, so when I'm out taking Daisy for a walk, I'm constantly speaking to myself, I have TMS, I am healing. And literally, you're laying new track in your brain to the part of the brain that quells pain. And when you're kind of perseverating on your pain and your issues, you're lighting up that lizard part of your brain that's associated with fear. Because fear and pain, I mean, they're very good friends, as you know. I think it's really cool that we're getting the science through the functional MRI pictures, that we're getting the science of why this whole faith thing works. I mean, I know there's the mystery element involved too, but I kind of like the science geekiness of it. And it helps me to realize, you know, because the faith, it isn't something where you say something for a few days and all's better. I mean, faith is a long haul. It's embracing the mystery and the uncertainty. And when you're hurting, that can be kind of hard to do. So I appreciate the angle that Dr. Schubiner comes in and kind of quantifies what's going on in the brain. And, of course, Steve-O talks about that in his book. And Dr. Sarnel certainly touches upon it. But I think Dr. Schubiner gets a little more in-depth with what's going on. And that's been very helpful to me.
Good stuff.
Yes. Awesome. You know, I had to learn to be at peace in myself again, like I started out. And I lost that peace. And I'd actually lost the peace before I got hurt. I lost it before I got hurt. I just went through a lot of issues, lost a business, and lost a lot of money. And I just got my focus on those bad emotions. I was just focusing on the bad emotions. I was feeding them. I was feeding the fear. I was feeding the anger. I was feeding the hurt. Thus the pain. Soon as I bent over in the backyard to pick up a weight that I'd already picked up 1,000 times before, something that I did routinely, hundreds of times a day, when I would like put shingles on roofs, that those things weigh 80 pounds a bundle. I mean, I bent over to pick up 80 pounds, and I got this twist in my back. I thought it was just a little tear. But in my mind, I went inside, and I was thinking in my mind, what if it's not just a little tear? What if it's something bad? Well, lo and behold, 2 and 3 days later, you know, usually I healed up in a day or two. 2 or 3 days later, it didn't get better. And I kept in my mind, well, this is it. You know, I'm getting old now. I'm an old man now. You know, I was only 39. Here I am. I'm old, and I'm hurt, and that's it. My days is over. And that settled in my mind. That fear, it settled in my mind. And when
it's too bad Walt isn't on the phone right now. That'd be great.
Right, exactly.
yeah. I mean, well, there's people that calls me. I'm a grandpa. There's people that calls me an old man, you know?
Right, I know.
You know, I got 5 grandbabies. But at the same time, I've never looked at myself in that way. I've never looked at myself as an older person. And I know everybody is probably listening thinking, well, you know, I don't look yet. But at the same time, when you're sitting there and you can't even get out of bed, you can't even tie your shoes. I mean, you get this old thought. You get these old thoughts. You get these old patterns. You get these patterns in your mind, and they're just fear thoughts. They're thoughts of hurt. And these thoughts of hurt, these thoughts of pain, these thoughts of doubt, these thoughts, and listening to the id that wants to play, listening to the super ego that's telling you, get up and go do something. What's wrong with you? You know, listening to the inner critic, the inner bully, listening to all of this, I'm sitting there and I'm agreeing with them about how I'm not a man no more. I'm no good. And I'm agreeing with all of this. And while I'm doing it, I'm only hurting myself more and more and more. And the peace that I had cultivated over a period of 15 years, I'd cultivated this peace, I'd cultivated this power that when other people would come around me, they'd say, I want to be like you. And that was, to me, that made me feel good. And I went out and I prayed for people. I saw lots of healing. And the thing was, when I prayed for them, I would see them healed before I would pray for them. I talked about it in the last show. And I would lay hands on them. I would pray. And then they would be healed. Okay? But when it happened to me, I couldn't see myself healed. And that was one of the problems. The other problem was I was agreeing with the bully. I was agreeing with the inner critic. I was sitting there. I was casting. And I was the one bringing up all these thoughts. I was. You know, in my mind, I was the one that was agreeing with my own negative thoughts. And it weakened me and weakened me. It got me so bad that I was right at the point that I thought I, you know, probably had fibromyalgia because I was hurting my whole body. And right at that time, by the grace of God, I went across the web and heard Howard Stern talking about
wow.
Dr. Sarno. And then I went from there, and I believed it automatically. As soon as I saw Dr. Sarno, you know, I had this sort of part in me that said, this is too good to be true, but I had this other part in me that was saying, everything he's saying is what I was doing to heal other people. I would hear him say, tell it to leave, tell it to stop it, don't, you know, and go back and do what you was doing before. Get yourself back to living. Everything that Dr. Sarno was saying in his 12 daily reminders or meditations or whatever you call them, I'd already knew that. I'd already knew it from years and years of study and other mind-body books and other psychological books. But it wasn't all condensed like it was in the TMS books. In the TMS books, they condense it. They put it together. See, when I'd go to church, they'd say, well, you would think another preacher's got to pray for you. This great preacher that goes around and heals thousands of people, he has to be the one to come to you, lay hands on you, in order to get your healing. And I did get a healing like that from a lady named Dora. But that was when I was 29. Now, at 39, I'm hurt again. Dora's nowhere around. I don't got Jesse Duplantis or Joel Osteen or any of the greats to come lay hands on me. The thing was, I had the power to heal my own self through my own thoughts. All I had to do was stop agreeing with the fear. Stop agreeing with the doubt. Stop beating the heck out of myself and start believing that I can do this. You know?
Wow, Herbie, yeah. You just laid it down there. That's good stuff.
It's the truth.
Yeah. That's exactly it. So it was about empowering. Like, you learned to that you had the power to do this for yourself, that you had the power to change your own destiny.
Yeah, when I read the TMS books, it condensed everything together. That's what I loved about the TMS books. That's the reason I grabbed a hold of it, and that's the reason I'm a huge part of it now, is because it condensed all the mind-body books together. And it told me that I was the captain of my ship. It told me that I was the one that was in control of my emotions and not my emotions in control of me. It told me that I could make this pain stop. It told me all that, and I believed it because I'd already studied it in all the other great books my entire life, and I'd already seen it happen time and time and time and time again. And through myself laying hands on other people, the thing was, I'm not going to say this is the same power as your higher spiritual power, but at the same time, God, your higher spirit. When he created you, he created you in his image. If we're created in the image of God, then we got power to heal too. And if we got power to heal, then we got power to heal ourselves. And when I started reading all of that in John Sarno's book, when I started putting all that together, I said, man, this is it. I knew it from day one. The only doubt I had was to just make sure that somebody else was on the bandwagon. Next thing you know, I see TMS Wiki. We got a whole bunch of people on the bandwagon. Everybody's getting healed. Everybody's got good stories. Everybody's coming through this. Sure, it's taking some of them a year. Sure, it's taking some of them 2 years. I think it took Steve 5 years or whatever. Thing is, they're getting healed. I don't care how long it takes. You stay with it, you get healed. Same with me, you know. Up to about a year into it, I could cough, and I would still feel this pain in my back. But here's the thing. I stuck with it. now I can do anything I want. I can bend any way I want. I can sleep on my belly. I didn't sleep on my belly for over 20-something years. I can sleep. I can do anything I want now. I'm totally healed. And it's because I believed it, you know?
Yep.
So I'm just sitting here with a big grin on my face. This is obviously why you are a wonderful preacher.
That left us all speechless. Yeah, you got that fire inside of you.
Fabulous. It's just fabulous.
Yeah, that's the word.
Well, you know, really, really honestly, a lot of people look for outside sources so they can get better. They look for outside sources so they can get better. And we do need to know the knowledge. We do need to know the knowledge. But at the same time, you're the source. You're the source that's going to heal you. You're the person that's going to say, uh-huh, that's it. And then again, you'll learn it again, uh-huh, that's the other part. And then you'll put the puzzle together. And then for you yourself, you'll pull it all in and you'll heal. And even when you get it all, you'll still have to let the reconditioning go ahead and happen. And when it all happens, that's it. It's done.
Yeah.
And then you'll go around and you'll tell everybody in the world about it, hopefully. I'm sure everybody does.
Yeah, and that's kind of what you end the chapter on, too, is you ended on this message of hope. And the fact that if we are willing to accept this idea, then we can heal ourselves.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I can end it on something right here. There was a book that I read for years and years, and he kept saying in the book, it was Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. It kept saying in the book, it's in every chapter. The answer is in every chapter if you can find it. And I read that book over and over and over and over again. And I thought to myself, why don't he just say what it is? And the truth is, he did say it. He said it over and over and over and over and over and over again in the book. And one of the things he said was like this. He said, "Oh, high providence, I ask not for more riches, but for more wisdom to direct the power of my mind so I can attain any want, need, or go that my heart may desire." Why do we not ask for more riches? Because we already got all the riches in the world. The riches in the world that you got, your peace, your love, your joy, your happiness, your gentleness, kindness, your self-control. Those are the riches. In any time, those are your powerful riches. Okay? Well, why do we ask for more wisdom? Because you want wisdom to direct the power of your mind. Here's the key. You want to direct your mind. You don't want your mind directing you. You want to direct your mind. That was the key. That was the secret key to the whole book that I tried to get for over 10 years and just couldn't get it. But I'm telling you, you direct your mind. You become the captain of your ship. You figure out what it is that just ain't clicking, that you're doing, that you ain't doing right, and you'll get it. And most of us, it's a loss of peace. And why is it a loss of peace? Well, I'm not better yet. But at the same time, you keep putting the pieces together. You keep figuring out how to direct your mind better, how to direct it better, and you'll get there. You'll get there.
Well, I like how you're talking about the loss of peace here. That was one of my favorite parts of the chapter. Do you want to tell me a little bit about the loss of peace? And I think you told about your own story for a loss of peace.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, I went around and I could help everybody else. I was able to lay hands on people. There was a young girl, her eyes was bad crossed. She had real thick glasses on. We prayed for her. I straightened up. Next day she went and got, she went to the doctor, got her eyes checked. Her eyes went back to 20/20. I could go on and on with these stories. But anyway, the thing was on the inside of me, I still felt loneliness. I still felt, and I still had that inner bully. I still had that inner critic. I still had the little id, you know, that wanted to act up and so forth like that. And I had to learn to control that part. That was the part that I had to learn to control, okay? When I learned to control those parts, then I got my peace back, because I became the captain of my ship again, okay? I thought I was already the captain of my ship, but no, I had a lot of other parts in there that was running my life that I had to take back control of, okay?
And you also talked about learn to generate generate and love the feeling of peace running through your body and the love of the feeling of happiness. Truly feel peace and love emotionally by your own thought patterns. You said, think of peace and enter it into now. It's just a thought away.
Yeah, when you were talking about that earlier, about pessimists and optimists, I thought to myself, you know, to be an optimist, if you want to call yourself that, then it's one of the hardest things in the world. You have to practice it over and over and over and over, and you have to practice it every single day. But one of the great things you're going to get out of it is you're going to be able to say peace, and then think about it, and then feel it go through your body. If you practice these affirmations like peace, love, joy, like I was saying in another show, you can start to cultivate what these emotions feel like, and you can feel them go through your body. The night that I felt the healing flow through my body, I sat there and I just thought of the word peace. It flowed through my body. I thought of the word love. It flowed through my body. The feeling of love, what love feels like, you know? And so many of us we want love. We want peace. We want happiness. But the only way you're really going to get peace, the only way you're really going to get happiness, the only way you're going to really going to get joy is when you focus on what joy feels like in your life. And then you can learn to cultivate it through meditation. You'll get it. But until you practice it, it's learning to be an optimist is not easy. But at the same time, go ahead.
And you said working conditioning in your favor. I like that idea. And that's, it reminded me a lot since North Star has brought this up about Howard Schubiner. But Howard Schubiner's big model is learned nerve pathways. And that's actually David Hanscom's big model, too. It's all about neuroscience and how our brain is, they call it brain plasticity. The brain wants to learn. And so what I hear you describing is you're teaching the brain how to love. You're teaching the brain how to be at peace. And
yes.
Yeah. And that's how you become incredibly resilient. Keep going.
Yes, because within that one year, sitting there and thinking all those negative thoughts, agreeing with every inner critic, every inner bully, agreeing with all of those all those web searches I did, and agreeing with all of that, within that year, I felt like I'd never even been a preacher. I felt like I'd never even been anywhere near healing people. I didn't even know if that time in my life even really was real. That's how low I had gotten, and I had to retrain myself. I had to get it all back. I had to totally redo it. Yeah, I got fired up. I got totally fired up the night that I saw Sarno and the words he was saying and how he was saying it. But at the same time, I had to recondition my body. I had to totally get myself back in to that optimist thinking, that optimist world, if that's what you call it. And that's what it's called, I would assume. I had to totally retrain myself, recondition myself to get back there. And yeah, that really, really helped me get better, because again, on the night I got better, it was like I was feeling this love flow off in my body. I don't know how to explain it, but it's the feeling of love, like when you're in love with somebody, or like when your mama hugs you and tells you she loves you, or you graduated and somebody gave you, you know, a big graduation present, or whatever love is to anybody. That feeling right there. You can cultivate it. You can cultivate it. It's called feeding. You think about, you know, what it feels like, and you meditate on it. And eventually, you'll get it.
I heard a quote the other day that I think kind of fits with this. I just love it. It says, give your positive emotions a job.
I like that.
Put them to work.
We're so good. We're so good at giving our negative. We're so weird. I was growing up in the family of worriers, and that was all we did was worry. If the mailman showed up, we'd all run in the back room and wonder who it was at the door, okay? I mean, we didn't know not to worry. I mean, all we did was worry. My mama said I got on her nerves so much, I imagined myself jumping up and down. I had a dream that I was jumping up and down on my mama's nerves. I didn't even know what nerves was. And I was just a kid. And we was just all a bunch of worriers. And we're born and we cultivate and we get so good at knowing how to feel bad. We get so good at knowing how to feel terrible. And that's the reason I say that it's not easy to cultivate how to feel good. But when you get it, and when you cultivate it, and when you keep practicing it, and keep practicing it, and keep practicing it, and you finally get it, you don't have to go around and, you know, always be the sunshine in everybody's life, but you'll be the sunshine in your own life. You'll go around and you'll be happy in your own life. The glow will come from inside out. You don't have to try to impress anybody anymore. You'll just be. You'll just be, and then other people see it in you. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Mm. I think this is what we see in you on the forums. Like when we see your posts, you do have this amazing sunny energy and positivity and love, real. You know, like loving kindness meditation. And it's good to hear it from your voice too, because we know it's true, because you can really hear it in you and in the passion that you feel.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. We're so good at feeding our negative emotions. I love. Was that North Star or Molly or?
Yeah, Molly.
Molly.
Okay, Molly. That was awesome because we're so good at feeding the negative side. And I've heard Forrest say this saying plenty of times about, you know, feeding which wolf. Which
right.
wolf do we want to feed?
I almost read it out today.
Yeah, the evil wolf or the good wolf, you know, and the kid says which one's gonna win, and the grandfather looks down and says which one you gonna feed the most. And we're gonna have these bad emotions. The bad emotions are there for reasons. They're there. But at the same time, you've went your whole life feeding them. You know, and we're at an age in our life that we need to start cultivating and feeding all those good ones. Because those good ones is what's going to give you your energy back, give you your strength back, give you your peace back, give you your joy back, give you your hope back. That's the stuff that legend's made of. That's the stuff of beauty. That's what makes you want to go out, see the beautiful sun as it shines on your arms. That's what makes you want to go for those long walks. That's what gives you the energy to go and do things that you do. But if you keep feeding those negative emotions, and everybody knows we have them, they just tend to drop in whenever they want to. And when they do, that's when we need to practice changing them right then and there. That's when we need to practice changing them. I do it all the time. I have to do it all the time. And everybody, you know, that gets a chance should cultivate feeding those good emotions. It's going to only make things better. It's going to only make things better. It sure seemed like it sure helped me heal fast. It was, again, I got to say it, I say this a thousand times, It was the night that I got better. It was the feeling of love that was flowing through my body. That's the reason I wrote all this in the book. It was the feeling of love that was flowing through my body. And that's what had me so fired up. That's what had me, and I was so energetic. But I was so at ease and calm. But it was that feeling of love that was flowing through my body. And I don't know how else to put it.
Powerful thoughts. Anybody have any questions or comments they wanna jump in? Everything is welcome. Well, I think you've got us all speechless, Herbie. Eric? Shall we wrap it up? Is there anything else you want to say in the book? Go on. What were you about to say?
No, that's it.
All right, then. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. You sure there's not something? I kind of get the sense that there's something else at the tip of your tongue that you still want to say. Am I right there? Is there something in there?
I mean, you know, I had something here, and we'll just end it on this, okay?
All right, that sounds good.
And this is on the next to the last page of the book, and I pray that as the day unfolds, you'll be encouraged to ride the wave of glory and let it sweep you into a place of hunger. My sincere desire is to place a coal of burning desire into your spirit. Whatever your emotional state, whether saint or sinner, knowing you can heal, now will bring a foretaste of healing from heaven to earth. You'll find that being in union with your spirit and at peace after enjoying the visualizations and meditations of grace, the charm of all the lies and fears completely broken. Once you've tasted the glory, you'll never be satisfied with anything else. And I want to say the glory is peace, love, joy, happiness, gentleness, kindness. That's your power. That's where your power is at. Okay? You ain't gotta look for it from afar. You ain't gotta go and see if Pastor Jim's got it down the road. You got it living on inside of you. Cultivate it. Feed it. Love it. That's it.
Powerful stuff. Well, any final thoughts, Molly? Did you want to add anything?
No, it's just wonderful. It's wonderful to actually hear you speak, because I think that same energy does come through your writing, Herbie. But it's even better to hear you in person.
Thank you, Molly. God bless you.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone. And next week, we will do the two chapter 10s. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to wrap up the recording now. I did not mention this in the beginning. I very much apologize. It's because everybody on the line, I know you all very well, but I didn't mention it. But I'm going to say it so I get it out of my system, because I got to say it and I got to get in that habit. We are not doctors here. This is not meant to take the place of meeting with an actual doctor. If you have a medical concern, you should go see an emotional concern, a psychological concern. You should see a medical or a mental health professional, preferably one who is well-versed in TMS. So that is it for this week, and I look forward to chatting with all of you next week as well.